Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics, and a special welcome to our new viewers in Mid-Missouri on KRCG 13. We are here in Columbia, overlooking the campus on top of the city at the Broadway Hotel with the president of the University of Missouri System, Dr. Moonshoy. Dr. Choi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Great to be with you again.
All right. So of all the places in the state that have had COVID issues and had to go special precautions, the University of Missouri has taken some extraordinary measures to try to keep students safe and stop the spread. Walk folks through some of the precautions you've taken to keep the students safe from COVID.
Sure. Well, it started up by having a fall semester that was going to be different. We wanted that in-person experience for our students, but at the same time, taking into account the masking requirements and social distancing. So many of our classes that were in person had to be located in buildings and classrooms that will allow for social distancing. And so our largest building, as you know, for gathering is Jesse Hall. In Jesse Hall, the auditorium can seat about 1,800 people if it's fully packed. But with social distancing, we have about 100 students who take classes in biology or psychology, but that provides us with the safe measure of putting on the mask as well as social distancing. And so far, it's going well. It's going well.
So folks that on campus, they, I guess you're spaced out a little bit more in classes. You're wearing masks. I even see outside in Columbia, you have to wear a mask in certain places on campus. I've heard some folks push back the other side and said, you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing when kids come back to college. There were going to be lots of deaths and illnesses. From what I've seen from the outside looking in, that has not happened. A lot of cases, but not a lot of hospitalizations, not a lot of no deaths of any students, correct?
That is true. And we had a peak of about 700 student active cases back on Labor Day. But since then, we've come down 90%. So we are now below 70 active cases.
Of those students, were they hospitalized? Did we lost a student?
We are not aware of any student that was hospitalized because of COVID. And we've had over 1,700 cases. And we knew that students would recover, typically between a 10 to 14 day period. And I'm also happy to report, with the exception of one student that we are aware of, all students who recovered from COVID are back in their studies.
So that's outstanding.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So some folks would say, well, maybe you're going a little far. Maybe you're being a little too aggressive with some of the precautions. You know, if I talk to my dad and mom, they'd say, well, if you're a young person, you're not even going to know you're sick.
That's right.
Do you hear folks, do they even get to you? Because I hear them. This is maybe it's a little much on campus.
They
maybe
do.
You're a little too far.
They do. I hear from our faculty, students, staff, alums, and just Missouri citizens. They'll send me emails and saying that some of the measures that we have are going a little too far. But being trained as an engineer, I always like to have a safety factor, just to ensure that we account for things we don't know. Mm-hmm. And when we started this out back in March, addressing the pandemic, we closed the campus when there was only one known case.
Sure.
One known case. And if someone had told me that in September, we're going to have a total of about 1,700 cases and we would still be open, I would think, that just can't be right. How is that possible? But it's through active planning and also thinking about scenarios that can occur. And so with the COVID crisis, there are things that we may have gone a little too far, but we pull them back. For example, we made it a requirement that once you're outside, even if you're walking alone, you need to wear a mask. But we heard back from the community about what that would do in terms of students' mental health and so forth. And we listened to our medical experts and we pulled that back. So masks are required if you are outside and you cannot maintain social distancing. But as long as you can maintain social distancing and you're exercising, playing Frisbee, no masks are required.
So the one thing I've always admired about you is you're a data guy. You're being an engineer. I've heard you, when you just give a regular talk, you talk about data. What is some data points that you're going to take into account as you start to roll things back? When a student says, okay, let's say he's a junior now, he says, okay, my freshman year, I want it to be like that again. What's the data points you're looking at that can roll these restrictions back and make it like that experience was 2 years ago?
Absolutely. And I wish we can roll it back tomorrow if we can. But in being mindful of the health effects, not only to our students who we know have contracted it at a high rate, But the transmission from our students to our faculty and staff is concerning.
Because to the community, right?
To the community, yeah. Absolutely. We have a responsibility. And we believe that the social distancing and masking, especially in indoor spaces, has worked. That's why we're seeing the declines in number of active cases. I believe that with the combination of having a vaccine that can be rolled out very quickly, hopefully it can come to Columbia early part of next year. With that, I would see that we will begin to relax some of the regulations so that we can have a more normal in-person experience for our students.
So in reality, folks are looking at a vaccine before things get back to normal.
That's right. A vaccine, according to the public health experts that I'm listening to, not only from the CDC, but Boone County, and the experts that we have at the university, that is the best measure for us to start reducing the restrictions that we have.
So there's been a lot of effects of COVID that are more than just people getting sick. The budget's been taking a huge hit on every level. My assumption is higher ed, it seems like every time they do withholdings, higher ed gets hit first.
That's right. And we've had cuts from the state, and we know that it was inevitable because of the economic downturn that all communities were facing. We are grateful that the governor released some of the withheld funds yesterday. That go a long way for us to meet our mission as a university. But the decision to open was based on many factors, including the fact that we live our lives by managing risks. Mm-hmm. And we knew that there will be risks. We knew that students, when they came back to the campus, would contract and spread COVID. We've seen that at universities that opened before we did. But we had plans in place with quarantining space, contact tracing, and the hospital facilities to manage that situation. We learned a lot during that process, which is to say, overestimate the number of cases as opposed to underestimating. And by putting in the resources, we have been able to see the dramatic reduction, the 90% reduction. But we also feel that we are a very important component to the economy in this region and to the state.
Sure.
We create the workforce. We do research that benefit farmers in rural Missouri to developing the types of educational programs that reduces disparities in inner cities as well as rural region. That's a very important endeavor. And for us, it was important for us to then find ways to have in-person that rich experience for our students, and our faculty and staff have stepped up.
You know, I think sometimes in outstate Missouri, it's sometimes easy to kick the university. You're too liberal, elitist, whatever it is. But no matter what, wherever you're at in the state, having the flagship public university of this state being successful is a key component. Employers aren't going to locate here without an educated workforce, without a university to partner with.
Absolutely.
Walk through some of the stuff Mizzou does, and maybe even UMSL, UMKC, RALA obviously is a tremendous school. What they do to partner with and actually bring jobs here that benefit. Maybe you don't get that job if you live in Farmington, but you do business with folks who do business with those employees.
Of course. The fact that when Bayer merged with Monsanto, they brought in 700 scientists and engineers from North Carolina to Missouri is a testament to the type of workforce that we can create. And we are the largest producer of PhDs in the state. We're the largest producer of medical graduates and engineering students. And with that complement of technologists and specialists that we produce, this becomes a destination.
Sure.
And one of the reasons that we were on the list of being considered for the Hyperloop and the Amazon headquarters was because of the investment that the state has made in public higher education. And we need to continue that.
You really do see that back. I mean, when you talk to folks that really do create the jobs,
absolutely,
they want that educated workforce. And anymore, it's not just high school diplomas. And a lot of it is technical junior college degrees, but a lot of it is those engineers. They want a tolerant society that they can recruit young folks in.
Absolutely.
Those folks have to have intelligent people to live amongst, to produce the jobs that people talk about creating jobs. That actually creates jobs.
That is so true. And in this new economy, I do believe that students who graduate from universities need to be multifaceted. So it doesn't matter whether a student is graduating with a degree in mechanical engineering, they need to be able to speak and write clearly. They need to understand the humanist component about the importance of their work that benefits society. On the flip side, a student who studies history must also understand technology because it's such a driving force in society.
Well, you have a world-renowned journalism school, and there's probably no profession in the world that's changed as much as journalism in the last few years and probably will in the future. Technology is something, if you don't know technology, you're not really a journalist.
Absolutely, and that is the best way for journalists to communicate, whether they are live tweeting an event where they can get feedback from their readers or listeners or viewers. That gives journalists more power, I believe, to be able to tap into stories that resonate with the communities that they serve. And technology is central, and we need to continue that.
Speaking of journalism, I mean, there's on college campuses, it's known for free speech. I mean, I think going back, when I think of where protests are, a lot of them are on a college campus, you get young folks there. However, really, you know, I think to a lot of people, the most stifled free speech on a campus maybe isn't a minority group that's a racial minority or sexual minority. A lot of times the speech and the groups that are the most censored would be conservatives. Colleges are known for being very liberal. However, I thought very proud of Mizzou. They were ranked sixth amongst all public universities for free speech. And that's, again, free speech is not exactly just your right to protest, which is easy to do on a college campus. It's actually the right to maybe think for yourself.
Absolutely. To have the focus on intellectual pluralism and to understand that everyone's speech is important and they have a right to speak. And for us to provide a venue, to provide encouragement for people to express their ideas, even those ideas that may be offensive, demonstrates the commitment to free speech. But I also believe that free speech must be done mindful of the time, place, and manner component. That at a university, we have so many venues for people to express their feelings, express their perspectives, like at Speaker Circle.
Sure.
But free speech that disrupts the business of the university, the important business that serves all of our students and Missourians, has to be addressed. And that's what we're doing at the university.
That's got to be a fine line to walk, though, as in your job. Because at what point are you stifling free speech as opposed to letting kids get to class that just want to go to class? I mean, to me, I think that's a real challenge. And maybe for cities, for sure, but especially on college campuses, drawing that line between, okay, you're right for free speech, but also this other person's right just to get to class.
That's right. And those are all issues that we're trying to put into balance and understand how we can promote that free speech principle, but at the same time, recognizing that there's important work at the university that must continue. We have students who pay tuition who want to learn. But if they are blocked from getting into the class because of, let's say, a demonstration, that violates our policy. But it also violates our policy if we invite a speaker in as a guest speaker to come to the university to share their perspective, to shout down that speaker. That is wrong. That's a violation of our free speech policy. And so each of those cases will be evaluated. And also due process will be provided to the violators, and then appropriate sanctions will be applied. And it'll be consistent. Doesn't matter whether you're liberal, conservative, independent, a consistent policy that says free speech is important, but we must follow time, place, and manner guidelines.
Lastly, I thought it was a compliment to Mizzou this weekend. They moved the LSU game to Columbia.
That's right.
That's right. That's got to make you feel good. Maybe you're doing something right here at Columbia to be able to host that game.
Well, I tell people we don't get hurricanes in Missouri, so that's a good thing. But I think our Tigers are going to play really well. The game on
My
Saturday.
My prediction is the Tigers win this weekend.
You know what? Tigers are going to win this weekend. I agree with you. And I think we may shock the world this weekend. So let's keep our sights on what happens on Saturday, 11 o'clock in Columbia.
M-I-Z.
Z-O-U.
Dr. Choi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back with Columbia Mayor Brian Treese, but first, go to showmissouri.com. We went to Lafayette County, one of the most beautiful cities in all of Missouri, and Lexington. Just a terrific place. Learn all about the Battle of Lexington, the great history there in Lexington, all over Lafayette County, showmissouri.com. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Ann Wagner, and I approve this message.
I'm Jill Shoup. Here's the truth. I don't support Medicare for All.
Does Jill Shoup think we're stupid? Whose name is on this Medicare for All bill? And this one. It's yours, Shoup. You can't fool us. You pushed for a complete government takeover of healthcare twice.
You deserve a representative you can trust.
We know. That's why we don't support you. Jill Shoup's already shown she's too radical and too extreme for Missouri.
Your energy needs are changing. That's why at Ameren Missouri, we're not waiting on the future. We're building it with the Smart Energy Plan. advancing thousands of projects across the state, helping reduce emissions through cleaner energy sources, boost reliability with self-healing equipment, and better withstand storms with new composite poles. Moving Missouri forward and bringing us all a little closer together. That's energy at work. Ameren, Missouri.
Pay-to-play Nicole Galloway is embroiled in scandal and controversy. Her alleged corruption is shocking. Galloway took nearly $500,000 from an organization whose leadership was convicted of bribery, embezzlement, and money laundering. Missouri's attorney general said Galloway committed a felony. And now the Board of Accountancy is investigating Galloway for abusing her office for political gain. Pay-to-play Nicole Galloway, a disturbing pattern of corruption. Another shady Jefferson City politician.
The Defund the Police movement is a real threat to public safety and Missouri families. I'm Eric Schmidt. As your Attorney General, I'm standing shoulder to shoulder with law enforcement to put violent criminals behind bars. That's why I've launched the Safer Streets Partnership with federal prosecutors in Missouri to give stiffer sentences to violent felons. That's already resulted in over 300 charges being filed.
Eric Schmidt, Missouri's tough on crime law and order Attorney General.
It's a circus, all right. Jefferson City politicians trying to distract you with an old school sideshow. Amendment 3, 5,000 words of smoke and mirrors put on the ballot by politicians. The truth? Amendment 3 has lobbyist gift loopholes and lets insiders draw legislative districts that protect their favorite politicians. No wonder judges call it misleading and unfair. Send a message to those clowns. Vote no to their dirty tricks. Vote no on Amendment 3.
Welcome back to Week in Missouri Politics from the rooftop here in Columbia, overlooking the campus, University of Missouri. We're here with the mayor of Columbia, Mayor Brian Treese. Welcome to the show, sir.
Scott, welcome to Columbia. And because we're more than 6 feet apart and we're outside, I can safely remove my mask, and it's a pleasure to visit with you.
So first thing is, Columbia is a place in the state where people are moving to. It's growing.
Yeah.
What's going on right in Columbia that's attracting new families to live here?
Well, I think part of it is our vibrant community and our commitment to equality. You know, when I was elected mayor, we've added over 1,076 new jobs with a capital investment of $326 million. We have $500 million worth of new construction happening in the next 2 years. These are high-wage, good-paying, skilled jobs with benefits. A $200 million precision medical complex on the University of Missouri campus. $230 million horizontal bridge project across the Missouri River. We've got a $38 million airport terminal going in and a neighborhood policing center. This is, by every definition, one of the fastest growing communities in the Midwest. We're also the only city in the state to grow jobs faster than the nation as a whole, and I'm very proud of that.
You ought to be. There's a buzz in Columbia that's attracting people for a reason. Now let's talk about something that every city's dealing with, and that's COVID.
Yeah.
Tell me, what is the status? Are you plateaued here in Columbia yet? What's the status of COVID here in Columbia?
I think we've pushed through the two spikes. But as I said back in February, as coronavirus was taking hold in Washington State and Washington, D.C., at the time, I think the fear was more contagious than the virus. And I committed then to follow the data, to make decisions based on science, not political pressure or public opinion, to really be prepared but not panic. And I think that has guided us every step of the way, from our emergency declaration to our stay-at-home order to our mask mandate. I think it has helped protect Columbia. Our first COVID case became the first death in the state of Missouri. And I think, you know, as difficult as these decisions are, we have balanced the interests of public health with the interests of our economy.
Well, you're going to deal with something the mayor of Macon or the mayor of Dexter doesn't deal with. You're going to deal with thousands of students coming back from all over the country.
Yeah.
Into Columbia. There was going to have to be a spike on that hit, right? Just a number of cases.
We did. And to prepare for that, I think the mask mandate was important. We had 30,000 students coming back from all over the world. We have over 4,000 visiting scholars, international students that come here to go to school. And I think as we adopt that community ethos of protecting not just ourselves but each other, that has really prepared us. I think for parents who want to send their kids to school, you want them to stay in school, whether that's the university or whether that's your K through 12 public schools.
So what is give me the major precautions. If somebody comes here from outstate Missouri where they don't have any additional precautions, when you come to Columbia, what should you expect?
Well, keep your distance. If you can't maintain social distance, wear a mask. And to do that, we need to have widespread community adoption of those principles. Right now, we have about 10% positivity rate. And while that is lower than the rest of the state as a whole, it's still higher than what we want to see. Let me give you an anecdote. Right now, we have about 60 people hospitalized in Columbia's hospitals. And I want Columbia to be a healthcare destination. Sure. Only 15 of those, about 25%, are from Boone County. The rest come from areas around Columbia, and that says a lot about our rural healthcare system, yeah. But it also says a lot about, 75% of those cases come from areas without these types of public health orders, without a mask mandate, without the type of public health protections that we want.
So when you talk about these, you're probably gonna get questions from most other interviews you do, why don't you do more? I hear from a lot of folks, I might run a different crowd than some other folks that ask you questions. I think sometimes people say, why are you forcing people to do stuff? Why not just advise people and let them make their own choices? Do you worry sometimes you go too far?
No, and look, this is not a race between Columbia and Kansas City and St. Louis or Dexter or, Bolivar. We need to do what's right, and again, to follow the data, to make decisions based on science. And it's really no different than government saying employees have to wash their hands after using the bathroom. Do we have a police officer there watching to make sure you do it? No. Is it gross if you don't? Could people get sick if you don't? Absolutely. And it's the same with coronavirus.
So walk me through, if you're following the data, what are some data points that you'll look at when it's okay, things are getting back to normal now? What are you looking for?
We look at hospital capacity, but it's not just hospitalization and fatality rates. It's our public health professionals' ability to do contact tracing. Are we keeping up with the number of positive cases? Do we have sufficient testing? Is there widespread testing so that we can isolate, particularly in that student body where we've seen widespread transmission with college students that, let's be frank, I don't know a lot of college students that like to socially distant.
Yeah.
And so when we can isolate those positive cases, that keeps the rest of our economy safe, because it's those college students that are working in our restaurants and bars and our nursing homes, that are student teaching in our public schools. And when we can keep that positive population segregated from the rest, that makes us all better.
You know, it's interesting. I've seen different local officials. I truly think you're in a crisis when no matter what you do, a reasonable person could question it. But it looks like you're doing what your constituents want you to do. It seems like in Columbia, this has been the regulations and the precautions you've put in place have been well received.
It's easier to do it when you have public support.
Yeah.
But again, we want to make those decisions not based on public opinion or political pressure, but where the data leads us.
It's similar with anything, though. Don't you have to have some public buy-in to really make it work? They have to believe in you. They have to believe you're making decisions based off logic and reason, or they just won't do it, right?
I do, and I think consistency is important, not just at the federal and state level, but here in Columbia. The constant communication that I have with the University of Missouri, with Columbia Public Schools, with the County of Boone, really enhances public confidence, because they see government working together, speaking with one voice about the importance of public health.
Let's talk a little politics. My assumption is we are in a place right now, about anywhere you could see, Donald Trump is not very popular here, right?
Well, he's certainly underwater here in Boone County, and we're one of those first-class counties outside the urban areas that tend to be a little more progressive, but also very, common sense oriented. I think as that pandemic fear that I mentioned turns into pandemic anger, as people are unable to travel or go to a baptism or visit their loved one in a nursing home, I think that's a tough spot for incumbents regardless of political party.
Well, it looked to me like, when Bernie Sanders was going to be the nominee, if you were a Republican, you thought, okay, we're great. When it came to Joe Biden, I've always felt, had a major advantage. He's a likable guy. It's very hard to convince you that Joe Biden's corrupt or that Joe Biden's a devious, mean person. You might not agree with his politics. Demonizing Joe Biden was always going to be very tough. And I would say Claire McCaskill, one of the best politicians in the history of this state, when she ran for re-election, she brought one national figure from the Democrat Party. It was Joe Biden. I just think he plays well in Jefferson County, in Ashland, in places where maybe he doesn't win them, but he just doesn't lose them like Hillary Clinton did.
Well, I think he's probably the singular candidate that can bring back those hardworking middle class essential workers that have been so disenfranchised during this pandemic. When you think about, you know, who do we have to thank right now? It's our nurses, it's our truck drivers, it's our grocery store workers, and Joe Biden relates to them. He can speak to them. And I think that will play in his favor in 30 days.
You're very familiar with state politics. I've always thought Biden loses Missouri 5-7. Where would you put Biden? If you had to predict right now where this is going to end, I'm still kind of feeling like Trump wins 5-7. Biden closes that gap by, what would that be, 12 points? But I don't know that he gets 2-3. Where do you think it ends up?
Well, I think you're probably right. I think at best, Trump is at 50-50 right now in the state of Missouri. That's a far cry from the plus 16 that he had in 2016. And I think what will be a different indicator will be, you know, what are the coattails there? Do Biden's coattails extend to congressional races or state Senate races or even, you know, locally when it comes to who you trust to be your state representative?
I think it may be more that does Trump have a negative coattail effect more than Biden? I think because a lot of those folks are people that have voted Republican that may just not do it again this time or may not vote at all. I'm not sure how much Biden has, but I really do think you could have a reverb in the suburbs. In Ann Wagner's congressional district, there's probably some folks that had to vote for Trump that, unless every poll's wrong, not just was wrong a few points like last time, but drastically wrong, they don't tend to be inclined to do that again now.
Well, and again, you've been around campaigns a long time, and the question that voters have to ask themselves on election day, am I better off today than I was 4 years ago? But I'm wondering today if it isn't, am I better off today than I was 4 days ago? And I think, you know, it's that exponential progression in public confidence, in our economy, in government's handling of coronavirus that is really going to influence where we are on November 3rd.
I think until coronavirus, Donald Trump could look the American people in the eye and ask them that, are you better off than 4 years ago, and ask them straight up and expect a lot of folks to say yes. I just think stylistically, the drama, it just seems to go on and on. I think there's a weariness of just the anger and drama that doesn't end. I'm not sure his management of the economy, you know, he has a very good case to make, but he doesn't ever make it because he's always yelling about other stuff.
Well, I think all of us would like to go a day without thinking about who our president is.
Yeah.
And and look, I'm a nonpartisan mayor, and I take that platform very seriously, and I'm committed to do whatever it takes to protect my community and advocate for the best interests of our community.
Well, you have one constituent who's running for governor, Nicole Galloway. Give me a prediction. Where does that race end up?
Well, and look, I've had the pleasure of working with Governor Parson since he was a state senator. Of course, all the mayors in the state partnered with him to keep guns out of the hands of violent offenders and children. And of course, Nicole Galloway is my constituent. I've known her since before she was Boone County Treasurer. And, you know, again, I think this pandemic anger makes for a tough position for incumbents, regardless of political party.
And she's a good candidate. I mean, the state would have a good governor regardless of who wins. She's very qualified.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I think having public confidence in our leadership, having consistent interpretation, particularly on basic issues like economy and public health, are going to do everything possible to move Missouri forward.
Well, Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for the hospitality. We appreciate it.
Scott, it's great to be with you. And welcome back to Mid-Missouri.
Thank you very much. We'll be back next week from our St. Louis studios. Hope you'll join us on This Week in Missouri Politics.
This Week in Missouri Politics, sponsored by the Missouri Association of Career Fire Protection Districts, SPIRE, and Sterling Bank.